You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, we're just talking about EOH, one of South Africa's largest tech service companies in IT services and industry consulting and systems integration, software, industrial technologies and business process outsourcing, which we recently ranked number one in the world in. The president even mentioned it in his weekly missive, and the group continues to try and put a period racked with fraud and criminality behind it, but it remains a market leader in its core information and communications tech business, which operates principally under the IOC brand name, just over 6,150 odd employees delivering service to over 5,000 enterprises. It's a big business. And while the group's current liabilities exceeded its current assets by 1.7 billion rand, the group has also signed term sheets to refinance roughly 2 billion of those facilities, bringing the ratio of current assets to current liabilities to above 1x. But the hard slog continues, I think, is the bottom line. CEO Stephen van Coller, welcome to the show. You reported top-line contraction of 29% year-on-year, mostly due to the disposal of businesses to sort out that balance sheet. And you did say that legacy public sector contract problems are now under control. What do you mean by under control?
Hi, Michael. Thanks very much. Good to be on your show again. I mean, I think a few things. One thing was, you know, obviously we've... Of that 29%, the lion's share of it, 1.3 billion of it, was to do with disposals that we had planned. And obviously those disposals have helped us reduce the debt burden by 2 billion. So good maths on that side. And more importantly now, the business is making an operating profit now that we've cleaned out these loss-making businesses and the legacy businesses. And that's really important. And what we left to do is clearly you go from an operating profit to a earnings loss, and that's largely to do with interest and the inefficient structure that gives us inefficient tax. On the legacy contracts, basically we had 10 of them. Two of them, you know, finished some time ago, but there was over-invoicing, and we've been engaged with the SIU. We settled the Department of Defense Force one. We're busy paying that off at the moment, and we're in negotiations on Department of Water Affairs. The difficult contracts that were bleeding cash because they were badly constructed, we closed five. We've now terminated the other three. Well, one gets to, finishes just naturally run out at the end of this month. The other two have been terminated. We're in handover process at the moment, and so that, you know, means that we don't have to spend any more on them, and there's some arbitration that we're going through too. So, you know, very much in control, and hopefully by the end of July finished, but very complicated to get there.
Yeah, absolutely, and just reading through the notes to the financials in the booklet today, it does take some forensic and accounting precision to go through the various issues. Can you give us an estimate of the future cash flow implications of the proposed settlement of the over-invoicing issues relating to those SIU investigated contracts, and when you actually expect that cash outflow to occur?
So on the one we've settled, it occurs every month. We've got a 36-month repayment period. And as I said, the one we've settled was 42 million. The other one's provided for. And I'm, you know, pretty confident we'll get similar repayment terms. So it will be over a long period. So it's not as if it's going to hit us all on day one.
Right. And the big unknown is obviously what value you're going to get for your IP assets. You say that it will substantially reduce your legacy debt. So does that mean you reckon to get close to the 2 billion for it?
No, I don't think so. But if you have a look, you've got about 120 million of EBITDA in the current numbers for this half, and obviously they were recovering. So if you double that up and then, you know, put some kind of a multiple on it, you can get a very good view of what we should get for those businesses. There's a few bits and pieces left. I think Megan was saying today that their net asset value as, you know, valued is just shy of a billion rand. And so with all, you know, all those discontinued businesses, it's not just those two assets. That's more or less what we should get out over the next 18 months. because they've been, you know, recently valued by the auditors.
And then just in terms of a growth strategy, we're just talking amongst ourselves, Wayne McCurry and Greg Cutts and Ollenburg, and about the sectors that are actually doing well thanks to COVID and have tailwinds. And it came through in the IOCO numbers. They were very impressive operationally. Is digital transformation. Businesses want to now know how they can work remotely and do it safely and securely, and all of those things feed into your core. What are your growth strategies? Can you elaborate on the top line growth strategy from here?
No, sure. So, Michael, IOCO is about 65% of our business at the moment. And that was always the key ecosystem we wanted to save because of how it works and how broad it is in terms of its product base and its client set. And that's what's made it so resilient, with I think nearly 84% is just services, which is own IP, the clever stuff. And what's happened in COVID is you've seen the move from hardware sales into the cloud, into automation, and into manage and operate. And that's really where we differentiate ourselves. So it's been great that it's accelerated, because hardware is low margin and the IP or services is obviously high margin. And so that's really helped us. So what we're trying to do now is what I call these new age products, if you want to, the automation, the cloud, the cybersecurity, the data analytics, and the QA businesses. Those are the ones that you get the most for, and where we most margin for, and where we differentiate ourselves. So we're moving those first, bulking up our Egypt business, and then using that as a stepping stone into Europe, and then secondly, using their lower cost of labor, because they are, you know, it's a big country, 110 million people, growing at 5%, and their education levels are, you know, just as good as South Africa. And so you can use them together with South Africa to move into Europe and take some of our platforms, like our digital signature platform impressions, or our, you know, medical records, our medical vaccine testing, medical testing, that's an FDA-approved platform, into Africa, as long as well as our sort of head office service platform, Cerebo. Start moving those in and allowing them to scale. We're seeing good traction there, with, you know, now 13% of our revenue coming from abroad.
Well, Stephen, as the president was writing in his weekly letter as well, business process outsourcing, another interesting area for South Africa to compete with rand-based costs and providing services and IP into hard currency foreign markets as well. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got. That was the EOH CEO, Stephen van Coller, reporting back on an interesting half. Still a lot of work to do. The market did mark the share down a little bit today, but if you listen to Greg Cutts and Ollenburgen as well, there are still some fantastic tailwinds behind the business, and probably fairly valued right now. Anne Williams is standing by with your news up next.